A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of The Sports Show, brought to you by thesportster.com. My name is Jim Parsons. We're going to be talking all about Survivor Series and Monday Night Raw on this episode of the show. Norman's going to join me in a second here. We'll break down what happened at Survivor Series, the pay-per-view, how it leads into Monday's Raw, storylines that are coming out of that show. We'll break down the matches. We'll break down the storylines. We'll talk about all of that. So, enjoy. Don't forget, listen, subscribe, share with others, give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, and enjoy another edition of The Sports Show, brought to you by thesportster.com. Welcome back, everybody. Another edition of The Sports Show. Jim Parsons here with you from thesportster.com. As always, Norman Quarantine on the other end of the microphone. Mike, Norman, how you doing?
I'm good, man.
I got fuddled up there. I said on the end of the microphone, then I said Mike, as if that were your name. It's not your name. Norman no, is not. Your name. Yeah.
Yeah. I got a weirder name than Mike.
I think my mouth was moving faster than my brain on that one. But hey, that happens sometimes. We're going to be talking about Survivor Series, Monday Night Raw on this show. So hopefully as we go through the results and talk about our favorite parts, our winners and losers, my brain functions properly and we can get through this without many major issues. Let's start with Survivor Series. I thought this was a pretty good show overall. The War Games concept was pretty cool. I do miss the traditional Survivor Series elimination matches, but this was the second best thing to it because I do not like the Raw versus SmackDown aspect of Survivor Series. What did you make of the pay-per-view overall?
Yeah, overall, I thought it was enjoyable. It was nothing mind-blowing, but I did kind of enjoy it for the most part. It was definitely, and yeah, like you said, it was a big improvement on some of the recent Raw versus SmackDown, Survivor Series. The War Games thing, I'll be interested to see if they end up, if that's the road they end up going down for the future. But yeah, what was interesting about it was this did feel like, and I think we're starting to see this a little bit, this show felt kind of like, and not just because of the War Games matches, but because of how those matches were booked and produced. It felt like kind of an NXT show when NXT was a bit more flying, was a bit more watchable and enjoyable. Whereas weirdly, I feel like NXT now feels a bit more like a main roster show, a sort of pre Triple H main roster show. So yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. Triple H did talk after the show was over in a press conference. I thought he revealed a lot of really interesting information. He was asked some questions about, you know, the War Games concept and whether or not it would be used regularly at Survivor Series or just moved around from pay-per-view to pay-per-view, used when needed. And he hinted that he's looking at everything. He's looking at War Games, Elimination Chamber, Money in the Bank, all of those gimmicky kind of concept matches that he's doing. He's going to relook at when and where they use them and probably walking away from the pay-per-views being themed around those matches and then just use to finish off storylines and stuff like that. So he didn't commit to the idea that War Games would be a regular Survivor Series thing. And to be totally honest with you, I hope that it isn't. I did like it, but he said, you know, you sort of need a break, right? The Raw versus SmackDown, the traditional Survivor Series elimination matches. You sort of have to take a step back every once in a while to make them feel special. And I got the impression he was saying that they might go back to that at some point. Mm. Although I don't know that you would go back to the Raw versus SmackDown thing. The issue I've always had with that is it doesn't really make any sense because they don't really hate each other. You know, they,
right.
The cross brand stuff has always sort of been a question mark. Like, is there really any brand exclusivity here? Why would somebody who was just on Raw 2 weeks ago now hate the people from Raw because he went mm-hmm. to SmackDown just mm-hmm. arbitrary? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And then they have all these like go home shows where their locker rooms just fight with each other, wearing their t-shirts for Raw and SmackDown respectively. It's just dumb. Like, it just, yeah, doesn't...
it didn't make any sense. It was silly. I think it was cool, you know, kind of a bragging rights kind of thing, like back in the day and back when when you'd have the rosters be unique for some time. Whereas more recently they had been doing these, they'd be doing Survivor Series 2 weeks after a draft, and it just felt fake and contrived yeah. and silly. And then, yeah, like you said, the problem with some of the, when you sort of have it so that this pay-per-view is going to have this type of match, you're booking yourselves into a corner, right? With the exception of the Royal Rumble, which is like a multi-man match that everybody's trying to win. If you say that, like, you know, every November we're going to do War Games, well, then you're booking yourselves into a corner. You have to try to all the fans, all the viewers know that as soon as November rolls around, we're going to start getting, you know, alliances and teams of five forming and stuff like that. And it was the same when they had the Hell in a Cell unique pay-per-view. It's the same with TLC and Extreme Rules, honestly. It's kind of like, you know, with Hell in a Cell, part of the fun of it, part of the excitement of it was that you never knew when one was going to come. And it would only be utilized for very, very specific feuds where that required the cell to sort of keep everybody inside or whatever. And now they just, you know, if you have luckily they haven't done it for a little bit, but yeah, when you have a unique Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, it just feels kind of silly.
Yeah, that's what he was arguing, and that makes a lot of sense. He's like, it's those, you know, Hell in a Cell matches are kind of a blow-off to the end of a major feud between two people. And the Elimination Chamber, on the other hand, is not like, in his words, were, okay, hey, you and me, we hate each other, so let's fight with five other people in the ring. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't make any sense, right? So why would you do that if you're trying to tell a story? Instead of, you know, using the matches to finish your story, don't make your stories work around the matches. It doesn't make any sense. And I totally agree with him. You need to build your storylines first, long-term thinking, and then have that match be the payoff to the rivalry or the feud that ends because somebody won at Hell in the Cell, or because you can't really build a feud around Money in the Bank. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. But with the War Games concept for Survivor Series, we did get to see some pretty cool stuff. It started with the women's War Game match, which I thought was really good. I can't help but think that Rhea Ripley is standing out for me on this women's roster. Mm. Like, just night and day, the elevation after joining Judgment Day, how she's really been quite dominant in her matches, and she always seems to be getting the pin. Even with her own group, she's kind of become the, you know, de facto leader, even though they don't have a leader. She's kind of that person, and she's mm-hmm. really standing out for me on the women's roster. I think she's on her way to being the big deal. Mm-hmm. And her timing is excellent. I mean, because there's no Charlotte, there's no Sasha. Becky's just coming back. There's a lot of people missing from the roster, and Rhea's really grabbed that and kind of become a major deal there. Mm-hmm. What did you think of this match? I thought it was okay. It was different than the men's. The men's one told a story. Mm-hmm. This one didn't. This was more about sort of the action in the ring, the spots, Becky jumping mm-hmm. off the cage and through the table, mm-hmm. which was kind of a surprise considering she just came back. But I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was solid. I enjoyed it. It was a good opener, I think. Crowd was into it. It seemed like some cool spots. Yeah, and you're right about Rhea Ripley. She really is starting to fulfill that potential that, I mean, you know, she's always been an impressive athlete, but not always been sort of booked super well, and hasn't really sort of blown people away in some of her matches as much as we thought she might when she first sort of debuted in the Mae Young Classic, for example. But I do feel like, yeah, she's starting to fulfill some of that potential and is starting to cement her spot as a as the big mama on that women WWE women's roster.
Yeah, like before she was not in terrible spots. They just didn't really know what to do with her. She stood out because she was Rhea Ripley. She looked different. She acted different. She could go. She was strong, things like that. But now you put her in, like, I think they're doing the right thing creatively with her, but I don't know that they're necessarily booking this stuff to make her look like a star. She just is. Like, she's in the ring with other women and she's standing out. She's in an 8-man tag or 8 mixed person tag on Raw, and she's this one who's standing out. Like, it just, she's figured out a way to be the it thing in any segment she's a part of. And I think it's huge for WWE. I think it's huge for her. And I think that they've recognized this and started to say, okay, well, she's onto something here. Let's run with this. Mm-hmm. I think that's really, really good. Becky Lynch coming back is huge. I think that was pretty obvious that Belair and Lynch were probably going to be the reason that they won that match. It's hard to not have them win when you have the momentum, like Becky Lynch coming back into the fold. And it looks like Lynch and Bayley are probably building towards something. They mm-hmm. started it at Survivor Series, then sort of continued it on Raw, which was a little awkward. We'll get there in a minute. The crowd interaction was odd, but it was not bad. We'll see where it goes. What about AJ Styles and Finn Balor? I like this match. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that AJ Styles picked up a win here. I don't think it hurts Finn Balor. I think they did it right and protected him in the loss, but AJ needed this, I think. This was a win that Styles, you don't know it necessarily when you watch him, but he hadn't had a singles win on a pay-per-view in like 3 years or something. Mm-hmm. So this is pretty big for him. I thought this was a good match.
Yeah, I enjoyed this match. Yeah, it was. I think they the two of them definitely have a much better match in them. But this was really solid. Yeah, definitely a good performance from both guys. And you know, I like that they have been utilizing and referencing by name Bullet Club on air, and acknowledging the fact that this was a match between two former Bullet Club members. There's a story already built in there, even if you take away the OC, which obviously is, you know, a spin-off of Bullet Club. Even if you take away the OC Judgment Day storyline, this is a match between two guys who, you know, in another timeline could be close friends.
Yeah, and Michael Cole wasn't shy about talking about it, like you said, right? When they came down, the narrative he was telling as they were coming down to the ring, both wearing their masks and stuff like that, was that they wanted to prove who was the better leader of mm-hmm. these groups, whatever you want to call them, Bullet Club, OC Club, whatever the case may be. The idea behind this match was they had something to prove. I'm the better leader. No, I'm the better leader. So they're not shying away from that history, which the old WWE under Vince McMahon probably never would have done, which is really cool. The biggest loser for me, I think, on the night was the Ronda Rousey and Shotzi match. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't really good either. Mm-hmm. Like, they tried to do a lot of stuff that I thought was just kind of awkward, right? Like, Rousey and Shotzi missed a couple spots. Like, there was one where Shotzi comes off the rope and Rousey, like, belly to belly slams her, but it didn't really look like a move that was meant to be that way. They went out to the crowd, which I'm sure had some planted developmental talent sitting in a chair, and Shotzi jumps off the rail and rams Rousey through the guys sitting in. Like, that just seemed unnecessary and awkward to me. It just felt kind of forced, like this match was trying to be more than it was ever going to be. So it wasn't awful, but it certainly didn't live up to the other stuff, in my opinion. What did you make of this one?
Yeah, there were moments in this where I thought, I don't know, there were definitely, Shotzi was up for it. Shotzi seemed really up for it. And I think that she was super excited. And I think she was ready to put in a shift. And I don't know that, I think Shotzi's really great. I think she's got a lot of charisma. She's clearly capable of getting the crowd on her side. But I don't know that she is a good enough worker to get a good, to sort of carry someone like Ronda, who is, you know, I mean, this second Rousey WWE run has been very, very lackluster. You know, she's a star. She's got main, you know, cross, you know, mainstream appeal. You know, I understand why she's on that roster. But since her return, she just hasn't really, I don't know. She seemed a little bit, the stuff with Liv was pretty good, right? And I think that that was mostly because of Liv, to be honest with you. In this match, she just didn't seem to, like, she wanted to take any of Shotzi's moves, and she bottled out of a couple of moves, and it ended up making the match way worse than it could have been had she been more willing to actually sort of work with Shotzi. I think Ronda needs to be in the ring with people like Sasha, Charlotte, Bailey, people like that, to get sort of a really, really strong performance out of her. Or she needs to be in some sort of, you know, street fight kind of thing. This match got a little bit scrappy at times, but yeah, like I said, her unwillingness to take some of Shotzi's moves really, really was to the detriment of the match. And it was upsetting. And yeah, and then later we found out that it was produced by Brian Kendrick, which was interesting.
Yeah, that's it. I'm not sure how well that's going over backstage, considering his history of saying some things that are a little bit questionable on social media. But that was in the past. Maybe they're feeling like that's over.
And Ronda Rousey has a similar history. So there you go.
Right. You know what? What's interesting for me about Rousey is I wonder if it's a little too late to go backwards, because if I'm WWE, I don't ever book Rousey in a situation where she needs to sell so much, right? She's coming over from MMA. She's one of the most, now she's long since retired from that, but on the way out, she was one of the most dominant female athletes in the world. And you could have just run her like a Goldberg for a while and had her be basically unstoppable, beating a bunch of people until she finally gets in matches with, you know, the likes of a Charlotte or a Bailey or a Becky Lynch or whatever the case may be. I don't know that you can go backwards now. She's tried to sell moves and make these other competitors like Shotzi and Liv, and it's sort of up to her level. And really on paper, they shouldn't be. Like, I like Shotzi a lot as a character and a gimmick. I think it really is kind of cool. And Liv's got this sort of swelling underground following that is building. And I think that makes sense, but really they shouldn't be in the same league. But I don't know that you have that ability now to go backwards, because Rousey's been selling for these competitors and making things look pretty even. I think if they could figure out a way to just make Rousey stand out dominant and have her be with Baszler, bring in those four horsewomen and just have her little faction, even though it sort of feels like she doesn't necessarily need it, but she just wants the little gang mentality of MMA former fighters who can just torture people. Maybe you got something there, but I just wonder if they've sort of passed that opportunity now, because she's been in matches where she hasn't looked wonderful, but she's been trying to sell for people to make them come up to her level. I don't know. I just, something's off to me with that. And I don't know where you go from there.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like she just enjoyed her time. You know, she took some time off. She became a mother. And I think maybe they made her an offer that was too tempting. I feel like this is fine, right? It's totally fine to be like this. I feel like she just doesn't really have that much of a passion for the business or for the fans. And so, yeah, I think she took some time off and probably enjoyed it. And then they made her an offer a financial offer that was too good to refuse. So now we're in this situation where it feels like she's just kind of phoning it in a little bit.
Yeah, I think if they let her naturally be the heel that she probably should be,
right,
and gave her the mouthpiece that she probably needs, or just let her be like, she to me feels a lot like Roman felt to me early on, where he was on his own and he was being forced these promos that didn't really work, and the WWE universe wasn't buying it. Ronda's got that going on right now. I think it's a little different with Shayna. Like, they seem like a natural fit together. Like, they're more, you know, they get a kick out of torturing people. I like that aspect of it. I think she should do more of that.
She has been a bit more of a heel lately, which has been an improvement for sure.
Yes.
Character-wise, anyway.
I think that's where they need to go full in on her. Because I think once you get that and she embraces it and she feels comfortable with it, that whole, like, she doesn't want to be here passion thing, maybe we start to get a different impression. Like, oh, yeah, she's really liking it. You know, like the same way that Roman he became the GOAT. Like, he is just absolutely the best heel in the business right now. But if you look back at this 2 or 3 years ago, you would have been like, really? But it's turned out really well. I think Rousey has that. I just don't know that she can ever wrestle up to that level. But I think if she feels natural and comfortable as the heel and they let her run with it and give her the right material to work with, it could be good. Austin Theory, surprisingly, I think for a lot of people anyway, becomes the United States champion in a triple threat. We were talking about this. We're like, how are they going to book this? I thought they did a really good job, actually. I'm a little surprised that Seth Rollins is not the champion right now, considering he wasn't champion for very long. but they did this well. I think it was a suplex where Lashley speared Rollins and then Theory fell on top of Rollins and got the count. So he sort of lucked into it, but at the same time, he's playing it off like, hey, this is my time. I told you, I was going to get this thing. He's such a man, night and day between losing that 24/7 or the Money in the Bank briefcase. And then where he's at just weeks later is really something else.
Yeah. The finish to this was a bit silly, but I liked it. If that was the result, they got from A to Z in a way that I think was probably the best way they could have done it. They knew that they wanted Theory to get that title, the way they did it was probably the best route they could have taken. It was silly, but fun.
Yeah, I thought he's really been quite good, and they needed a way to protect all three people, and I think they effectively did that, because Lashley looks like the one who was the reason the pin happened. Rollins doesn't look like he should have lost it in another way, so it makes sense. And then Theory becomes the ultimate heel here because he's got the title and probably didn't deserve it, but it's really good. Okay, so the men's war game match. This was the most fun for me. I thought the triple threat match with Austin Theory and those, I thought that might have been the best match in ring wise, just in terms of the back and forth and all three guys really putting on a show. But this men's war game match told quite the story. I mean, coming into it, the whole idea was, is Sammy really going to be loyal to us? So they had, backstage video interviews leading up to this and Roman testing out Sammy's loyalty and talking, and then coming in, and of course Kevin Owens planting the seed the whole time that maybe Sammy will turn or should turn in case they turn on him first. And we get this whole Sammy leads, sets it up so that he protects the bloodline, low blows Kevin Owens, which allows Jey Uso to land the frog splash. Bloodline gets the win. And then Jey Uso hugs it out with Sammy and they're now on the same page, which carried over to Monday Night Raw. So I still don't firmly believe, I think this is Jey putting on a show. That's how I see this. Like, I'm like, okay, he's understanding that being confrontational is not working for Roman Reigns. So I'm just going to pretend like I love Sammy, and when the time is right, I'm going to turn on him. That's how I see this. I think other people see this as, okay, he's finally really accepted and they're going to run with this for a while. Where do you see this? I thought this was an interesting story. Good match, but the story was the more important part here. Where do you see this going?
Yeah, the match was decent. Again, this was the match that I felt when I said that it felt a bit like an NXT. This really did feel like, obviously, that this would make sense considering that the War Games matches of recent times have been confined to NXT. But this really did feel, and I guess because of Butch's presence as well, who I get they mentioned on commentary, I think this was his third or fourth War Games match, which is kind of crazy. This was definitely, this did feel like an NXT match in a way, and not in a bad way either, not in a bad way. Just kind of that you can already tell that the booking and the match production, the way the matches are laid out is, we're not in Kansas anymore kind of thing, and I think that's going to ultimately be beneficial to WWE. And I think Triple H is still finding his feet as a booker on the main roster a little bit, but I think I think he's going to actually really ease into it. And I think people are going to start, a lot of people who dropped off of WWE, who became disillusioned with Vince's booking, and with Pritchard's booking, are probably going to come back, soon. I think that, maybe by WrestleMania time, things are going to be heating up and be really exciting. And I'm kind of looking forward to that. So the match was solid. I thought, some good spots, some good action. Everybody brought their A game. I actually thought Rich Holland was really good in this. Even though he hasn't been sort of in ring, his in ring stuff hasn't been, incredibly impressive. I think grouped with Sheamus and Butch is really, really beneficial to his development, because he is the least experienced of the three. We forget that he is, he's in his 30s, I think, but he hasn't been wrestling for very long. He's been wrestling for way less time than Butch and way, way less time than Sheamus. So I think he's improving, and I like what I'm seeing from him. Sheamus was up for it. Sheamus was brilliant. Butch was great. Usos were great. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, you know what you're going to get from them. They never let you down. And their chemistry is off the charts, and they were absolutely just really, really engaging in this match. Kevin Owens, the way he just kind of he can be off TV for 6 months and come back, and in 5 minutes be the most entertaining and charismatic guy in the roster. He's incredible. And then the story. I can see what you're saying. It could be like a little swerve. I definitely think they focused on Sammy's face at the end of that match, and there was they're already sowing the seeds of doubt immediately. I don't know for sure where they're going. I is Sami Zayn like? And I did say in the Slack at the time, right? I feel like Triple H in one match he fixed like 5 years worth of damage to Sami Zayn. Because main roster Sami Zayn has not been the same as NXT Sami Zayn. There's been moments of brilliance, the odd match here and there where he was booked really well. But overall, I think Triple H has kind of increased Sami Zayn's stock exponentially to the point where he's now like one of the main, main characters of the show. And is Sami Zayn a potential viable, threat to Roman's reign? I don't know, but we'll find out.
Yeah, this just, it has to end some way. The mm-hmm. trick is how and mm-hmm. when and how long do you want to run this out? And you don't want to pull the trigger too quick, mm-hmm. but you don't want to run it too long either, because it'll get old. And you want to, like anybody that says, oh, I want to leave when I'm at the top, you need these guys to break when they are at their peak.
Right.
So that's the trick here. And I think they're doing a pretty good job of setting that up.
Sorry to interrupt. I do want to say, right, I know that like if I say, oh, Sami Zayn beat Sami Zayn, in 6 months to a year, Sami Zayn could beat Roman Reigns for the undisputed WWE Universal title. That might sound absolutely bonkers. But that's because we're still thinking that Vince McMahon is running the show, and he's not, right? We know that Triple H sees top guy material in Sami Zayn because he's made Sami Zayn his top guy. And I think, if Bryan Danielson can become the champion in WWE, then there's no reason why Sami Zayn can't. I just wanted to get that out there. Triple H is booking the show now, so I think some of his favorites from NXT are actually going to start being showcased in a way that they deserve to be.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting because they're at a part now where Roman Reigns, whoever beats him, like we're talking Undertaker streak level. Mm-hmm. Like you got to decide who's going to beat this guy. Right, for years they're like, well, should it be this guy? Then they didn't. It should it be this guy? And then they didn't. Sami Zayn's in an interesting spot because if they decide to do that with Sami Zayn, that's huge, not just in terms of what it could do for him, but the pressure that it puts on him to be able to carry not just the brand as the champion, but the weight of having been the guy who beat Roman Reigns when nobody else could beat Roman Reigns. Right? It's really like on a wrestling level, I don't know that you have Roman Reigns lose, beat all these other people and then lose to Sami Zayn, but in a shock sort of like, how do you tell this story? How does it work? Like, where does that pin come from? Mm-hmm. That would be really something else. Like if Sami Zayn were the guy that they chose.
And they have started to show some vulnerability in Roman's dominance, right? We did see it we saw it with the Logan Paul. Logan Paul took Roman pretty far. And then, if not for Sami Zayn stopping the ref, Kevin Owens would have got a 3 count on Roman with a stunner during the War Games match. So they are starting to show some cracks appearing in Roman's dominance. You can foresee a situation where the bloodline is out of service or banned from ringside or something. And Sami Zayn's an underdog, man. He's one of the ultimate underdogs. We saw in his rise to becoming NXT champion in NXT, he's capable of doing it.
Yeah, and they've also got this sort of like, what's going on with Jay here, right? Because there's two ways you can go with this. Either he's setting up Sami Zayn because he still doesn't trust Sami Zayn, or he's setting up Roman Reigns out of spite.
Right?
Because if he's really that mad that Roman Reigns has let Sami into the family and embraced him like a brother, then Jay's probably just seething underneath, right? And he's looking for his spot and waiting and letting everybody think that this is all good and things are all kosher. And then he's the one that cost Roman Reigns, and you go back to Jay and it like breaks up the whole bloodline. And it could be that too. Like, I have no idea. And that's the beauty of this, is that there's so many ways it could go. And there's so many different results that could happen if they do it right, that could really work quite well. It'll be kind of fun to see. Let's move over a little bit to Raw, just in the few minutes we got left here. Show starts chaotic. First hour, commercial free. Becky Lynch, Damage Control fighting in the crowd. A little awkward moment between Bob, Becky, Zachary, and Becky. They fight into the concourse, into the merch stands. And then we go right into what was a singles match between Medium and Rhea Ripley, into an 8-person mixed tag match, which the whole first like 40 minutes of Raw was just crazy chaotic. And I think that was the purpose. They wanted to do that on purpose, just to let us know this was the speed of the show this week. I thought it was pretty good. The Lynch segment in the crowd was weird to me. They tried doing something. I don't think it landed, but not for the fault of trying. You might as well give it a shot, right? I did like the 8-man or the 8-person tag match, though. I thought the Rhea Ripley Mia Yim match was actually pretty solid. And then the 8-person tag that came out of it was a lot of fun. What did you think of the first opening hour of Raw, which was commercial free?
Yeah, pretty wild. I don't think everything really clicked into place as much as they envisioned. I think if you're going to be commercial free for that first hour, maybe you need to be a little bit more organized and maybe don't have some sort of off the cuff, wacky crowd work stuff. But yeah, it was fun. Definitely. It was fun and not the worst hour of Raw we've seen in the last couple of years. So yeah.
Yeah. I didn't mind it. Like I said, I thought the crowd stuff, I got this feeling like some of the things that we don't normally get to see when we're watching on TV that might happen during commercial break is what happens a lot, whether it's a crowd interaction or like Dominic climbing into the ring and having this interaction with Mia and stuff. Like, I think those would have happened normally during commercial breaks that we never get to see if we're not there live. And then we just got to see them this week. So they feel a little weird. And they feel like they're kind of forced and like, oh, they're just filling, but that's probably stuff that happens for the live crowd all the time. They just happen to do a commercial during that time to keep everybody busy.
Right. And we kind of saw that at Clash at the Castle, right, with the little sing along at the end, which was 100% would have been a thing, an untelevised moment, and they just kind of kept the cameras going for that.
Yeah, there's all sorts of talk about whether or not that was done on purpose or they screwed that up. But yeah, you never know. Like, I've been to a lot of live events. They always do kind of cool stuff for the fans. I guess a couple other takeaways from this show. Street Profits are back. I thought they had a really good match with Alpha Academy. 50-50 booking for Alpha Academy. Sometimes they win a couple in a row, sometimes they lose. But I thought Angelo Dawkins really stood out to me. I thought he looked great. Like, we talk about Montez Ford and what he's going to be as a singles wrestler at some point. I don't think you should overlook Angelo Dawkins. He was like the Marty Jannetty of the Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty Rocker split. But I don't know. I think Angelo Dawkins is pretty good. I think he's got something there.
Yeah, he's coming into his own for sure. I mean, you know what people say about the Marty Jannetty Shawn Michaels thing is that, you know, Jannetty was secretly the better worker. So I don't, you know. I think Montez definitely has more potential as a single star, but yeah, Angelo is, yeah, you definitely can't sleep on him, and he definitely fulfills his role properly and yeah, well.
I just hope they keep him together for a while longer. Like, I don't think you need to pull the trigger on a Montez Ford singles run yet. I think you can wait that one out. I know that people want it, and I think that people can see it, and I do agree that he has the charisma and the it factor to be something big, but I don't think you need to go there yet. Let this tag team kind of run its course. The Miz and Dexter Lumis, we've been waiting forever for this match to finally happen, for Lumis to finally get his contract in WWE. He gets it. He gets the money that the Miz owes him. To me, this didn't have the ultimate payoff like you would expect, you would hope, after months of building this up and telling different stories. And then, but it was okay. They paid it off. Lumis gets his contract. I don't know what's going to happen now. I'm assuming the Miz will go on to work with Johnny Gargano in a feud. Lumis, are going to have to find something for him, because you can't do all this, build it up, and then just drop him. He needs a good feud. He needs somebody to battle with.
They got to bring Indy up to.
Yeah,
they got to get Indy in. Well, they're, as far as I know, they're still legally married, aren't they? So yeah,
I guess
storyline. Yeah,
yeah. No, I it's interesting the way they booked that match on Raw. It had a little bit of like, there were mixed levels of different genres of wrestling. Like, I couldn't help when he's giving the money away. If people might not know this, if they're not, you know, old enough to remember this, but like when Andre the Giant slammed Big John Studd at WrestleMania 1 and then gave away all that money, and then Bobby Heenan runs in and he grabs the bag back so Andre can't give away the money. I had like feelings of that. And then there was like, Dexter Lumis can't be hurt by anything. I had feelings sort of The Undertaker just always sitting up. I had feelings of that. I don't know where the vice grip thing comes in, because he put a vice grip on his head, which was a really strange moment in a match. Mm-hmm. Kind of funny, but never seen that before. So I don't know what you do with Loomis. Like, that's, it's an interesting, he's a super interesting character. I think his gimmick is unique, and I think they could really make it work if they find the right thing for him. I just don't know what that thing is. Like,
right, and I do think he's better as a comedy thing, honestly. I don't think that that was what they had planned initially, but I think they realized that his shtick is kind of funny. Yeah, you know, he's kind of a more sort of slasher movie version of Orange Cassidy in a way, you know. So yeah, I think he works best in a more sort of comedic role for sure. I think there's a place for him on that roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they could figure it out and have him working with the right people, I think it could be a real hit. Dakota Kai and Candice LeRae is back. She picks up a big win here, actually, mm-hmm. a logical one. And a good match. Kai's probably tired from running the gauntlet at War Games and being in the ring for that long a period of time. So Candice LeRae picks up a win, which I think is smart, especially since they were talking about Corey Graves, I think, is the one who said it. You only get so many chances to shine in this women's division. If you don't win, you're just going to the back of the line. So she does get a win here that I think was really good. And then Kevin Owens and Jey Uso. I thought that was a heck of a match. Really strong main event. And Kevin Owens is able to overcome four members of the Bloodline. Now, to me, what I took away from this was Sami Zayn did not get involved here. He was very much in the corner of the Bloodline, cheering them on, but he didn't physically get involved at all. But everybody else kind of did. And so I get this sense that Sami's like, well, I'm here, Bloodline. I'm not going to touch my buddy, but I'm here with you. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to be a thing, if that's not going to turn into anything, if I saw something that isn't there. I don't know, but... Mm. I thought the Candice LeRae match with Dakota Kai was good, and then the Kevin Owens Jey Uso match was really interesting. Kevin Owens picked up a win here, so I think that was big.
Yeah, it was big. Definitely, he took the, am I right? He took the pin at War Games, right?
Yes.
KO. Yeah,
he took the low blow and then Jey Uso frog splash.
Yeah, and that was just like so smart. I thought that was really I think of the people on that team, you would have expected, you know, Butch or Ridge Holland to take the pin, but I think having KO take the pin, it was unexpected, and it just worked so much better for the story and made everything so much more meaningful than it would have been if it had, you know, that Sami Zayn that climax doesn't work as well if they do the same thing to Ridge Holland, for example, you know. He needs a win. I'm hoping because it's hard because you know Roman right now is just dominating and has everything, like those, he has both titles sewn up, and so it is that I'm hoping they don't get themselves in a situation where they're not able to create any new top guys like we saw with, you know, the sort of LOL Cena wins era, where they were struggling to create anybody, any kind of formidable worthy opponents for John Cena, because John Cena was so dominant. Hopefully we don't get that. You know, I think they have good bases to work with, that, you know, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, for example, they're ready to step up into that top spot if they need to. You know, I'm sure Roman's going to want to take some time off at some point.
He's definitely not working a full-time schedule, but I think they're doing it smart, like having him show up when it matters, being part of it. And the Bloodline storyline itself, it makes sense that Roman shouldn't be there every week, because they need to have their problems when he's not around. And then he comes back like an angry father who sort of whips them back into shape. Like, it just makes a lot of sense. So it, you wouldn't want him on TV every week anyway. And that Kevin Owens can pull off a win without Roman Reigns there also sets up the idea. Do I really need to come back and help you guys against one person? Like, how are four of you unable to take out one guy? Right. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting kind of fascinating idea that they're running. It makes sense to me. So I thought Raw was pretty good overall. Seemed like, I don't know why they did the hour commercial free, if they were up against something or they felt like it was needed. I'm not sure it made a huge difference to the show itself, but I thought it was pretty good. A good follow-up to Survivor Series, which I thought was a decent pay-per-view overall.
Decent pay-per-view. Yes, solid pay-per-view, decent follow-up. You know, we're about to start hitting the road to WrestleMania, right? We're getting towards the end of the year, and then we're in Royal Rumble season, and then so WWE, I expect them to start kicking into high gear very, very soon. And you know, Survivor Series and Raw, you know, Survivor Series wasn't as nuts and as exciting as it could have been, but it was definitely the signs are there.
Yeah, I'm very excited about Royal Rumble, because I think Triple H has already set the stage for all these surprises. who knows what he's going to do there. And I don't, the entire idea that he's been pulling too many surprises so Royal Rumble won't mean as much, I don't buy that for a second. I think that Royal Rumble is going to be his, in his brain, okay, now I can turn up the volume all the way and see what he does with it. So I'm really excited about that one. All right, Norman, thank you very much. The run through with Survivor Series and Monday Night Raw. I hope everybody enjoyed this. Don't forget, download, subscribe, share with others about the Sportster Show, and go to thesportster.com for all the articles and everything else. Until next time, this has been another edition of the show. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.